No matter who you are, no matter where you've been, no matter where you are right now, you are welcome here. Welcome to Daily Audio Bible Chronological. I'm Jill, and today is the 24th day of September. We are just going to go with it at this point. We're almost done. Let's just ride the wave of singing September. We need a little fun. Life is heavy and hard sometimes. Seems to be that way for a lot of people right now. And so while honoring those that are feeling the weight of the heaviness and the hardness of life, I also offer just a reprieve, a little break from all of it by hoping to just shed a little ray of sunshine in your day. Yesterday we began the beautiful, I'm Jill. Hi, how are you? How are you doing? How is your heart? If you feel the heaviness, yes, I'm with you in the heaviness. If you're like, I need a break from the heaviness, I get that too. Sometimes you need what your heart needs. Sometimes the heart needs a break in the heaviness. And we have to find that. We have to go out and find that. And so there is no judgment for those that need a break, a little spot of sunshine and the darkness. And there is no judgment for those of you that are sitting in the weight and the heaviness of the world. I do encourage us to not stay there too long. That's when we can get swept away. And so now we move on. Yesterday we began the beautiful book of Esther. We finish it today reading chapters 6 through 10, and this week we are reading the contemporary English version, Esther, chapter 6. That night the king could not sleep, and he had a servant read him the records of what had happened since he had been king. When the servant read how Mordecai had kept Bigthana and Teresh from killing the king asked, "What has been done to reward Mordecai for this?" "Nothing, your majesty," the king's servants replied. About this time, Haman came in to ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on the gallows he had built. The king saw him and asked, "Who is that man waiting in front of the throne room?" The king's servants answered, "Your majesty, it is Haman. Tell him to come in," the king commanded. When Haman entered the room, the king asked him, "What should I do for a man I want to honor?" Haman was sure that he was the one the king wanted to honor. So he replied, "Your majesty, if you wish to honor a man, get someone to bring him one of your own robes and one of your own horses with a fancy headdress. Tell one of your highest officials to place your robe on this man and lead him through the streets on your horse while someone shouts, 'This is how the king honors a man.'" The king replied, "Hurry and do just what you have said. Don't forget a thing. Get the robe and the horse for Mordecai, the Jew, who serves as one of the king's officials." Haman got the king's robe and put it on Mordecai. He led him through the city on the horse and shouted as he went, "This is how the king honors a man." Afterwards, Mordecai returned to his duties in the king's palace, and Haman hurried home, hiding his face in shame. Haman told his wife and friends what had happened. Then his wife and his advisors said, "If Mordecai is a Jew, this is just the beginning of your troubles. You will end up a ruined man." They were still talking when the king's servants came and quickly took Haman to the dinner that Esther had prepared. The king and Haman were dining with Esther and drinking wine during the second dinner when the king again said, "Esther, what can I do for you? Just ask, and I will give you as much as half of my kingdom." Esther answered, "Your majesty, if you really care for me and are willing to help, you can save me and my people. That's what I really want, because a reward has been promised to anyone who kills my people." "Your majesty, if we were merely going to be sold as slaves, I would not have bothered you. Who would dare to do such a thing?" the king asked. Esther replied, "That evil Haman is the one out to get us." Haman was terrified as he looked at the king and the queen. The king was so angry that he got up, left his wine, and went out into the palace garden. Haman realized that the king had already decided what to do with him, and he stayed and begged Esther to save his life. Just as the king came back into the room, Haman got down on his knees beside Esther, who was lying on the couch. The king shouted, "Now you're even trying to rape my queen here in my own palace." As soon as the king said this, his servants covered Haman's head. Then Harbona, one of the king's personal servants, said, "Your Majesty, Haman built a gallows 22 meters high beside his house so he could hang Mordecai on it. And Mordecai is the very one who spoke up and saved your life. Hang Haman from his own gallows," the king commanded. At once, Haman was hanged on the gallows he had built to hang Mordecai, and the king calmed down. Before the end of the day, King Xerxes gave Esther everything that had belonged to Haman, the enemy of the Jews. Esther told the king that Mordecai was her cousin. So the king made Mordecai one of his highest officials and gave him the royal ring that Haman had worn. Then Esther put Mordecai in charge of Haman's property. Once again, Esther went to speak to the king. This time she fell down at his feet, crying and begging, "Please stop Haman's evil plan to have the Jews killed." King Xerxes held out the golden scepter to Esther, and she got up and said, "Your Majesty, I know that you will do the right thing and that you really love me. Please stop what Haman has planned. He has already sent letters demanding that the Jews in all your provinces be killed, and I can't bear to see my people and my own relatives destroyed." King Xerxes then said to Esther and Mordecai, "I have already ordered Haman to be hanged and his house given to Esther. Because of his evil plans to kill the Jews, I now give you permission to make a law that will save the lives of your people. You may use my ring to seal the law so that it can never be changed." On the 23rd day of Sivan, the third month, the king's secretaries wrote the law. They obeyed Mordecai and wrote to the Jews, the rulers, the governors, and the officials of all 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. The letters were written in every language used in the kingdom, including the Jewish language. They were written in the name of King Xerxes and sealed with his ring. Then they were taken by messengers who rode the king's finest and fastest horses. In these letters, the king said, "On the 13th day of Adar, the 12th month, the Jews in every city and province will be allowed to get together and defend themselves. They may destroy any army that attacks them, and they may kill all of their enemies, including women and children. They may also take everything that belongs to their enemies. A copy of this law is to be posted in every province and read by everyone." Then the king ordered his messengers to take their fastest horses and deliver the law as quickly as possible to every province. When Mordecai left, he was wearing clothes fit for a king. He wore blue and white robes, a large gold crown, and a cape made of fine linen and purple cloth. After the law was announced in Susa, everyone shouted and cheered, and the Jews were no longer afraid. In fact, they were very happy and felt that they had won a victory. In every province and city where the law was sent, the Jews had parties and celebrated. Many of the people in the provinces accepted the Jewish religion because they were now afraid of the Jews. The first law that the king had made was to be followed on the 13th day of Adar, the 12th month. This was the very day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to do away with them. But the Jews turned things around, and in the cities of every province they came together to attack their enemies. Everyone was afraid of the Jews, and no one could do anything to oppose them. The leaders of the provinces, the rulers, the governors, and the court officials were afraid of Mordecai and took sides with the Jews. Everyone in the provinces knew that the king had promoted him and had given him a lot of power. The Jews took their swords and did away with their enemies without showing any mercy. They killed 500 people in Susa, but they did not take anything that belonged to the ones they killed. Haman had been one of the worst enemies of the Jews, and 10 of his sons were among those who were killed. Their names were Parshandatha, Delphon, Aspatha, Poratha, Adaliah, Eredatha, Parmashta, Eresai, Eredai, and Vezatha. Later that day, someone told the king how many people had been killed in Susa. Then he told Esther, 500 people, including Haman's 10 sons, have been killed in Susa alone. If that many were killed here, what must have happened in the provinces? Is there anything else you want done? Just tell me, and it will be done. Esther answered, Your Majesty, please let the Jews in Susa fight to defend themselves tomorrow, just as they did today, and to order the bodies of Haman's 10 sons to be hanged in public. King Xerxes did what Esther had requested, and the bodies of Haman's sons were hung in Susa. Then on the 14th day of Adar, the Jews of the city got together and killed 300 more people, but they still did not take anything that belonged to their enemies. On the 13th day of Adar, the Jews in the provinces had come together to defend themselves. They killed 75,000 of their enemies, but the Jews did not take anything that belonged to the ones they killed. Then on the 14th day of the month, the Jews celebrated with a feast. On the 15th day of the month, the Jews in Susa held a holiday and celebrated after killing their enemies on the 13th and the 14th. This is why the Jews in the villages now celebrate on the 14th day of the month. It is a joyful holiday that they celebrate by feasting and sending gifts of food to each other. Mordecai wrote down everything that had happened. Then he sent letters to the Jews everywhere in the provinces and told them, Each year you must celebrate on both the 14th and the 15th of Adar, the days when we Jews defeated our enemies. Remember this month as a time when our sorrow was turned to joy and celebration took the place of crying. Celebrate by having parties and by giving to the poor and by sharing gifts of food with each other. They followed Mordecai's instructions and set aside these 2 days every year as a time of celebration. Haman was the son of Hammedatha and a descendant of Agag. He hated the Jews so much that he planned to destroy them, but he wanted to find out the best time to do it, so he cast lots. Esther went to King Artaxerxes and asked him to save her people. Then the king gave written orders for Haman and his sons to be punished in the same terrible way that Haman had in mind for the Jews, so they were hanged. Mordecai's letter had said that the Jews must celebrate for 2 days because of what had happened to them. This time of celebration is called Purim, which is the Hebrew word for the lots that were cast. Now every year the Jews set aside these 2 days for having parties and celebrating, just as they were told to do. From now on, all Jewish families must remember to celebrate Purim on these 2 days each year. Queen Esther, daughter of Abihail, went to give full authority to Mordecai's letter about the festival of Purim, and with his help, she wrote a letter about the feast. Copies of this letter were sent to Jews in the 127 provinces of King Xerxes. In the letter, they said, We pray that all of you will live in peace and safety. You and your descendants must always remember to celebrate Purim at the time and in the way that we have said. You must also follow the instructions that we have given you about mourning and going without eating. These laws about Purim are written by the authority of Queen Esther. King Xerxes made everyone in his kingdom pay taxes, even those in lands across the sea. All the great and famous things that King Xerxes did are written in the record books of the kings of Media and Persia. These records also tell about the honors that the king gave to Mordecai. Next to the king himself, Mordecai was the highest official in the kingdom. He was a popular leader of the Jews because he helped them in many ways and would even speak to the king on their behalf. Okay, so something a little different today. I'm here with my favorite person. Hi, favorite person.
Hi, favorite person.
I thought we could do this together today.
Sure.
We're sitting here at Ezekiel's desk and see his big wad of gum.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes.
It's not my favorite thing.
Somewhat disgusting, but yes.
Yeah. So you just finished the Book of Esther not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to your commentary, which was extraordinary, by the way.
Oh, thank you. You're far too kind.
You're welcome. So I thought we could just kind of break this down together, because there's so many elements of this story that I love. And I guess I just wanted to also hear your perspective, since you kind of know this like the back of your hand.
I don't know about that, but I've read it 20 times.
Yes, you have. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
So I've just taken the last 2 days to read the first part of Esther yesterday and then finish it today.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the story of Esther. And then I just want to interject some things of the story that I love so much about this.
So, like, retell the whole story top to bottom?
Yeah, for reference, who is King Xerxes? Why is, you know, why is his presence important? And Haman and Mordecai and Esther, and how did they just show up all of a sudden in our chronological reading?
Oh, okay. So we've been reading about the sort of end of ancient Israel.
Mm-hmm.
The northern kingdom gets conquered by Assyria, and the southern kingdom of Judah gets conquered by the Babylonian Empire. And many, many are carried away into exile. And that's all in the Book of Jeremiah, and all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of references to that.
So the exile part is Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans that I have for you.
That's written to the exiles, yes.
And this has been 70 years-ish plus of them being exiled.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is happening in that time.
The Book of Esther happens during the time of exile, but the Babylonian Empire is conquered by the Persian Empire, and okay, that's where this king that you're talking about comes from. So now these exiles are no longer Babylonian, they become like Persian, and so they're spread out all throughout the Persian Empire. And the king, he has a fantastic celebration in behalf of Persia, brings all of his government and all of his military officials and all of the nobles and all the important people together in the citadel of Susa, their capital. Mm-hmm. And he's having this grand celebration, and he wants his queen to come. Mm-hmm. And be with him and kind of entertain everybody, Queen Vashti. And
Vashti.
She refuses.
That's a snazzy name, Vashti.
It's a very snazzy name.
Okay, she refuses her husband, which humiliates him, right?
Yeah, in front of everybody. And So, he's mad, but he also has legal implications. And so his advisors tell him basically, like, if she gets away with this and this gets throughout the entire empire, then our culture will be undermined. The way that things are done around here will be undermined.
But it wouldn't be a good thing for the culture to see the queen denying the king's request.
Yeah, that would be a bad thing. And so, in the end, she's deposed, and that leaves a vacancy.
Mm-hmm. Deposed, yeah, divorced, gone away.
Yeah, she's put away, yeah, and she's not the queen anymore. Ultimately, there's a search for a new queen, and all of the most beautiful women in the entire empire are brought into the city of Susa, and they go through this whole time of beautification.
But isn't this law put into effect because of Vashti's actions to the king?
I think they solidify, like, that was a big deal.
Right.
That was a big deal. And so, later on in the Book of Esther, we find, like, you can't go into the king's presence without risking your life. So, like, mm-hmm, for her to deny the king of the entire empire, that's a big deal.
It's a PBD.
Yeah, PBD.
Pretty big deal.
Yeah. And so, so there's got to be a new queen, and all of these lovely, beautiful women are collected and beautified, and they're going to kind of go take their turn.
Mm-hmm. I like the skin treatments, the olive oil, the incense, the fragrance.
Yeah, they're just, I don't know what to say. Like, the king has kind of got it made in a lot of ways. And as he looks for his new queen, and Esther's turn, Hadassah was her name, but Esther's turn comes, and the king falls in love with her. And
let's just understand that Esther is a Jewish woman.
Yes.
Exiled.
Mm-hmm.
Lost her parents.
Yes.
And her uncle Mordecai cares for her and takes her in.
Mm-hmm.
And really becomes this pillar, I think, of a influence in her life.
For sure.
Okay.
And he tells her not to say anything about her ethnicity. And so she doesn't. So she becomes the queen of the Persian Empire, and she's a Jew, exiled people that were conquered. And meanwhile, like, rising to power is this man named Haman.
Mm-hmm.
And he is an Agagite, we're told. And so he's like a descendant of King Agag. And if I remember right, it's Samuel, and it's during Saul's reign that Saul has a battle and he captures this king of Agag. He captures King Agag, and he wasn't supposed to keep him alive. And so Samuel's like, you know, how can you? He basically kills him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a descendant. Haman's a descendant. He hates the Jews because of this. Like,
yeah. So he has this whole personal vendetta against the entire people.
Right. And he's descended from, like, what would have been royalty. So he's got this vendetta, and he becomes second in command, essentially, to the king of Persia. He's got his ear. The king gives him his signet ring, which means he can act on behalf of the king. And he wants to kill all the Jews. Genocide in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a law, eventually. Like, the king is convinced, and that becomes a law. He's essentially saying there's these people in the empire that do not belong. They are, you know, riffraff. They cannot be trusted. They are dirty. They are whatever he needs to say to dehumanize them.
Mm-hmm. And if we just stop and pause, like, we can think of other scenarios like this that have taken place in
absolutely
history. I'm thinking of Africa, the Hutus.
Mm-hmm, the Tutsis.
The Tutsis and the Hutus. I'm thinking about Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, it requires dehumanization to create mass genocide. And that's, mm-hmm, you know, kind of what's happening here. In a specific day is chosen and it's put into law, and that causes chaos in the empire, and certainly chaos among the Hebrew community. Mordecai, being a Hebrew, is mortified, and he tears his clothes, and he gets word to the queen, and he's like, you know, you got to do something. You got to go talk to the king. And she's obviously like, I could be killed. I can't do, mm-hmm, that. And that's where the very famous passage is, like, look, you may have been born for such a time as this.
Yeah, let me read this passage, because this came specifically out of our reading today.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think that you'll escape being killed with the rest of the Jews just because you live in the king's palace. If you don't speak up now, we will somehow get help, but you and your family will be killed. It could be that you were made queen for a time like this.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's so, like, I don't know, Superwoman, grab your lasso.
Well, that for sure has an impact on her and changes the course of history in this story. And so she asks Mordecai to go have the Jewish community pray for her and fast. And she's going to do that inside the palace. And that's what happens. And then she risks her life.
She does. And I think that is such a beautiful and sort of mysterious part of the story. He calls to her, like, you can do something.
Yeah.
And it could be that you are the woman to do, save your people for such a time as this.
Yeah.
She could have just gone and made a plan.
Mm-hmm.
She surrenders herself, her will to God.
She does. And there's, I talked about this when we read Esther I think it's in the Vulgate. There's additions to Esther that are in the traditional Hebrew scriptures. They're in the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures, that include those prayers that she was praying and include those prayers that Mordecai was praying and like how they're crying out to God for favor.
Oh, wow.
And
how are you so smart?
I just read that a long time ago. I mean, the story of Esther is so compelling.
It is.
And, and full of drama.
So I just love that she prays. We don't know exactly in this context what she prays. You're saying that it's out there, but I just love that she doesn't strategize. That she doesn't just come up with a plan. This is what we're going to do. She just surrenders.
Mm-hmm.
3 days, fast and pray. Tell the people to pray. And I'm going to take the women and we're gonna do this from here.
Yep.
And she does.
And she risks her life and the king, you know, is glad to see her. Mm-hmm. He could have, you know, based on what happened to Vashti, it's, you know, it's clear that he has not a big problem, you know, getting rid of a queen.
Right.
And so, but he loves Esther. And so he's, you know, favorable to her and asks what she wants. And she wants him to come to a banquet and bring Haman, who is the enemy of the Jews. Meanwhile, Haman hates Mordecai. Hates Mordecai because Haman's now really high up. And so wherever he goes, everybody's supposed to take a knee and kind of, you know, show honor and reverence. And Mordecai doesn't. And so he hates Mordecai. He hates the Jews, but he hates Mordecai as a Jew above all Jews, basically.
Yeah.
So he just can't stand him. And he has this dinner with the king and the queen. He's feeling all big and bold. The king asks Esther, you know, what can I do for you? And she basically says, could you come back tomorrow and bring Haman? Like, can we have dinner again tomorrow night? And then I'll kind of tell you everything. Haman goes home that night on cloud nine.
Yeah.
He had dinner alone, solo, with the king and the queen of the empire. He is on top of the world. And every, you know, he's bragging and boasting to his friends and his family, and everybody's congratulating him. And he's basically saying the only thing that makes this not perfect is Mordecai.
Yeah.
That he's even alive.
He's feeling like a PBD.
Yeah, he is. PBD. And so his friends are like, you're a PBD. And you need to do something about this. And he builds a gallows to hang Haman, or I'm sorry, Mordecai on.
Yeah.
That night, the king can't sleep. And he asks basically for some of the annals, some of the goings on in the kingdom from times a little bit before, like just to read something boring to him.
Pause.
Yeah.
I think this is like one of the most fascinating details in this story. This feels like it's the miraculous in this story to me, because just in our own personal experience, like we're told when we can't sleep, go do something boring.
Yeah, if there's like trauma in your life and you can't sleep,
go do
something boring
for 20 minutes.
Read something boring for 20 minutes.
I think our therapist said read tax code for 20 minutes. So the ex king, king with the name X, calls for former records to be read aloud.
Yep. Something nice and boring. And and so they read of a time, and it just so happens that there was an assassination plot against the king. And there was a man who thwarted that assassination plot. And his name was Mordecai, Esther's relative.
Huh.
Yeah, isn't that strange? So the king is like, wow, he saved my life. What did we do about that? Like, what did we do for him? And he finds out nobody did anything for him.
Yeah.
And so the king is, you know, mulling this over as morning comes, like, we need to do something for Mordecai. He saved my life.
Right.
Like, he saved the empire in a lot of ways. And
I just discovered this in the middle of the night when I couldn't sleep and I had them read the...
Yeah, the drama is, like, dripping. Haman, meanwhile, has this nice gallows for the same guy. He wants to kill Mordecai, who saved the king's life.
Yeah.
Because he hates the Jews.
He hates the Jews. And I love that where we ended in the reading yesterday, it said something paraphrased here. Haman had the gallows built, and it seemed like a good idea. Mm. He thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, he's going to finally get rid of it, this nemesis, and eventually kill all the Jews and get his revenge. And so he is on his way in to see the king to get permission to do this. The king, meanwhile, has just been reading that this same person saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
So Haman gets before the king, and the king's like, hey, you know, Haman, hey, H, what would be done for the man the king would like to honor? And Haman is like, who else but me? Like, I just had dinner with you and the queen, like, who else?
Right.
So he's like, well, he should ride on the king's horse, and he should have a robe that the king wore, and somebody very high up should walk before him and say, this is what is done for the man the king would like to honor. And
he should wear a t-shirt that says PBD.
PBD. This is a PBD, everybody. And so the king's like, that is an awesome idea. I want you to go do that for Mordecai. Well,
that blood boil.
That is humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to do that. He has to walk before the horse with Mordecai wearing a king's robe on a king's horse and say, this is a PBD.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that Mordecai won't bow to him and that he hates him. And so he's humiliated. And when that ordeal is over, he goes home and he's humiliated. And at that point, there's a gallows built for him, and so his friends and family are like, you're not going to prevail against him.
Yeah.
About that time, the servants come to bring him to dinner with the king and the queen. So he goes to dinner, and that's where the queen then reveals, like, the thing that I want from you is to save my people. And because there is an evil plot against them to commit genocide against them in one day, and I'm begging for my life. If it was just me, I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my whole people. It's all of my people. And the king is like, who would dare?
Yeah.
And she, you know, reveals, like, she's a Hebrew, and the king is like, who would dare? And she's like, Haman.
Mm-hmm.
The king gets up and he's furious and he walks out of the room. Haman knows, like, oh, like, I've just had the worst day of my life.
Yeah.
And he's, like, on his knees before the queen begging for his life when the king comes back in. And he's like, you would dare, like, to try to touch the queen? And that's when the dramatic scene where servants pull a thing over his head,
mm-hmm.
which means he's going to be executed. And the king finds out that there's a gallows built for Mordecai, and
I mean, Haman thought it was a really good idea.
He was. He erected his own instrument of execution.
Mm.
And Haman is then killed.
Wow. That's pretty profound right there, when I think about how we sometimes execute our own.
Yeah, we create these scenarios to get revenge, and we're creating our own instrument of punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And it all turns back, and that's so, so well documented in the Bible, especially in the book of Proverbs. And so this all plays out in Haman's death. The problem is that the law is still alive, and the genocide cannot be stopped.
Yeah, the law cannot be revoked.
Right. So very quickly, Mordecai becomes he takes Haman's place, and the king gives him his signet ring because Mordecai was obviously loyal. He saved mm-hmm. the king's life. And so They have to figure out what to do because they can't revoke the law. And so he comes up with this alternative plan, like to create a new law that the Jews can fight back and that they can also take, you know, they can also fight against and destroy their enemies. At this point, it's known that the queen of the empire is Hebrew. And so nobody wants to fight against the Hebrews at this point. Like,
right.
There is a law to destroy the Hebrews, but nobody wants to do that at this point, except for the true enemies of the Jews. And so the Jews are authorized to fight them and also to, you know, have their own attack. And that ends up happening. And what was meant for, you know, to destroy the Hebrew people actually gave them the power to destroy those who would destroy them. And it took a couple of days. There's a day, like the day, I think it was a certain day of Adar. I can't remember. And then the whole destruction of the evil people took another day in the city, the capital city. And in the end, that creates the festival of Purim. And that is still celebrated today. I remember being in Israel in Purim once, and it's kind of like they go around and knock on each other's doors and give like little gifts and candy and stuff like this. And a lot of little girls dressed up like Queen Esther.
That's precious.
And I remember being in Bet Shemesh, seeing all these little girls walk across this, you know, this archaeological site and dressed up like Esther on the little pretty little princess dresses. It was really, really sweet.
I'm guessing nobody wants to dress up like Haman.
No, I don't think so. I didn't see anybody like that. So there you go. That is the story of Esther.
It's such a fascinating story, especially when you kind of get into the nitty-gritty of those details, like Haman's whole reasoning for wanting to obliterate a people off of the face of the earth was a vendetta against one person.
And against one people that had, you know, killed. He would have been, I can't remember, maybe he would have been in line for the throne. But, you know, the Israelites defeated his land and killed his relative, who was the king. So he hated the people and he hated Mordecai, and it just didn't work out for him.
Right. I think this theme of revenge has been so eye-opening for me this year in the Old Testament. And how much God has called the Israelites, his chosen people, to stand for justice. To stand against people in power that are abusing power. And to speak up for the unjust. And
which is so much of the prophets.
So much of the prophets. And they're the ones that usually get silenced.
Yeah.
And man, this story, it's like, even as a woman, just knowing how women were sort of second rate, is that fair to say, in the culture, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's a patriarchal world climate, for sure.
But we're finding sort of the benefits in the Bible of if you are a beautiful woman. And to see some of these women use their power for good.
Yeah.
Their beauty for good.
Yeah.
And some, you know, like Jezebel, for example, for evil.
Yeah. And I mean, beautiful women using their power of seduction in the Bible is also known and very much depicted and counseled against in the book of Proverbs. So,
absolutely.
The society, the culture of that time in the world may have been a certain way about gender roles, et cetera, but the power of a woman is profound.
Mm-hmm. And even profound. The language throughout the Old Testament in the prophets, minor and major. I mean, God has some harsh language in the way that he speaks as the Israelites, as an adulterous woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a picture right there.
Yeah.
And so I've spoken a little bit about the power we as women that possess and the beauty that we bring into the world. And we have a great responsibility because, unfortunately, in our society, patriarchalism.
Sure.
What's the right word?
I'm not sure.
I just made it up.
Patriarchy?
Patriarchy. There you go. Misogyny?
Yeah.
Is still very prevalent in our culture.
Sure.
And to see the character, the behind the scenes, the person of Esther.
Mm-hmm.
And her faith and her trust and her reverence in God. And I just love the story.
Yeah, I do too. It's a beautiful story.
And I love that you came and helped tell it today.
You're welcome.
So, what are your takeaways?
I think it comes at a good time in the scriptures. It's like a breath of fresh air,
mm-hmm.
in a time of like a lot of destruction. And so it's intended to bring hope. And
yeah.
All of the things that you said, like such a rescue comes through. It's like not all just the guys that are the heroes.
Mm.
The Book of Ruth also is such a beautiful story like this, or the judge Deborah and Sisera. It's, you know, there are really, really, really key, crucial moments where women shine.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that deeply.
Mm-hmm. I do too. While you're here, gotta get you to pray with us.
Sure. So, God, we thank you for the opportunity to continue this work and taking this journey into a relationship with the Bible and allowing it year after year, day after day, to all of its different complexions to reveal itself. It's never not fresh.
Mm.
It's always kind of dynamic to where we are in our lives. And so even as we move through Esther here, that's you know, that's challenging and meaningful to the community as we, you know, it, all over the world, it hits us where it needs to hit us. And so we thank you for that. And just invite the Holy Spirit to continue to bring the scripture in all of the ways that it comes. It comes in confrontation. It comes in comfort. It comes in challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It comes in rebuke. It comes in healing. It comes, it's a friend that doesn't look away and doesn't run away and doesn't hide. It just looks us in the face and says, hey, where are you going? What are the choices that you're making going to lead to? How is this going to play out? And is that where you want to go? And we thank you for that. We need that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're grateful. And we pray blessing over the Daily Eddie Bible Chronological community as we continue this journey, and as Jill, you know, as was prepared to transition into the Gospels and then into the New Testament. And so we're grateful. We love you. Pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
I think as you're talking, I'm reminded that we don't all have the position as queen married to the king, or a position of, you know, a platform,
mm-hmm.
but we all have a responsibility. We could all look at every choice that we make today as for such a time as this.
Everybody, everything matters. And yeah, everybody has a moment of, for such a time as this.
Yeah. So thank you for being here, favorite person.
You're welcome, favorite person. You're a pretty PBD.
Oh, wow. I'm going to get that made on a t-shirt for you. I'm a PBD. We love you all. Thank you for being here. Babe, thank you for being here.
Oh, I thought you were talking to them.
We do love you all.
We do love you all.
Until tomorrow.
Love
one
another.